Hello, and welcome to Spooky Chris Podcast. My name is Chris Ringler. I'm the aforementioned Spooky Chris, and this is my little podcast. I am an author, event coordinator, very infrequent filmmaker, and general ne'er-do-well. If you want to find all my stuff, you can go to SpookyChris.com, and you can find all my blogs and links to all of my books. I have a new book out called Heedless Reflection, which is a horror novel. And that just came out last week, a couple weeks ago. And you can find it on Amazon, but all my blogs are on SpookyChris.com and all of my past podcasts, which there's over 100. So if you like what you hear, you can definitely dive in and listen to lots more. I've been putting this one off for a minute, because it's not a podcast I really want to do, which is funny to say. I kind of want to talk about grief, as I am trying to slowly find my way through it myself. Not something I want to do or am good at doing. I have always, we'll say a bottler. I've always bottled things up. That's just, you know, you're kind of either a bottler or a releaser, it seems like. I mean, I'm sure there's variations of the two. But I'm definitely a bottler. I don't remember, you know, how much I may have cried as a kid. It's just one of those things that it's been a while. I don't remember, but I remember distinctly the last time I had done it as a kid was when I was 14. My father had walked in on my sister and her boyfriend in her bedroom. My sister was is older than me, so she would have been 19. And I don't know what they were doing. My sister had always claimed, oh, well, he was just laying on top of me. I mean, you know, something was going on. He had walked in on them and gotten an altercation with her boyfriend and was yelling at my sister, and it was just very, very bad. I had locked myself in the bathroom and was just bawling because I was just so scared. And it's weird to say, like, I swore I would never cry after that. And I didn't. You know, I guess I'm as good at some things. I'm as good as my word. In high school, when I had a teacher for an art class, a commercial art class, you know, told me that I was not an artist. He did not like me being in the class. I was in the class. I kind of skipped the line. You were supposed to be vetted to get in the class and kind of turn in a portfolio for him to look at and blah, blah, blah. But because I was in special ed, I kind of got to jump the line. And he always resented that. And he was very clear, you are not an artist. And I'm still not an artist. But those words cut real deep to an 18-year-old me, 17, 18. And I didn't seriously do art again for a decade. At least a decade. Maybe more. Like a long, long time. So when I was kind of declared I wasn't going to cry again, I hadn't until recently. Like, you know, I'd get teary-eyed and this and that, but I hadn't been until recently that I cried again. And it's strange because I've discovered that my body doesn't know how to cry anymore, which is, again, the craziest thing to say. But it's been so long, I don't remember. Again, I internalize everything. So I just kind of just go through it. But, you know, the dam, the water has been building behind the dam, and the dam has finally broken, and I'm just a mess these days. With reason. It's weird to think, especially, you know, which what I'll talk about. Since 2016... my wife and I have lost 2 dogs, 3 parents, We both lost a... Well, I've lost two friends. She's lost a friend. It's just strange, you know. And we've, you know, we've welcomed two dogs and a baby since then. So, you know, it... you know, there's the scales weigh against one another, but it's just, it's, you know, you look at that and it's like, wow, that's a lot. But you know, everything going on now, we have huskies. We have two huskies. My family had dogs, had singular dogs at times when I was a kid. I'm not an animal person. It's one of those things where I just was not going to have animals. Wasn't a responsibility I wanted, and the whole losing them eventually, it just was not something that appealed to me. Hitching my wagon to my wife, she is a dog person. She's an animal person, but she is a dog person. She is the patron saint of lost dogs, for to be sure. I kind of married into it almost. I mean, she had a dog when we got together. I married into it. So we had gotten, when she lost her dog, Toxie the Toxic Avenger, in 2016, he was 14 and he died of cancer. Wonderful dog. Made me fall in love with wanting dogs, and just because he was the sweetest thing, and he was a very big boy. He was a husky rot mix. After he had died, we took on a foster dog for a little while. It was a very, very sweet dog, but it didn't feel like our dog. She's super sweet. But she didn't feel like ours. So we found someone to adopt her, and then we went and adopted, who we named Woofington Danger, Ringler. Danger is his middle name, so his name is Danger. And he was big kind of back then, and he is very, very big now. He's a very, very big boy. We figure he's a husky mixed with shepherd. Sweetest boy. He's very, very big, very, very sweet. Has these soulful brown eyes that just stared into your soul. The first year and change we had, gotten him, I slept on the couch with him, because he didn't want to be alone, and he just didn't want to be alone, and he didn't want to be, sleep in the bedroom with us. So I slept on the couch with him, and he would munch on me, and because he was teething still, he was still kind of a puppy. And he would just munch on me. He ate his teeth when they came out, when his baby teeth came out, and he'd just munch them, because that's how he do. He had a period where he was eating poo. he would walk around and just occasionally go, bleh, throw up. That's just how he is. It may, maybe related to health stuff that we know now, but I don't know. So in early June 7th. Danger had thrown up. We'd all gotten home from work and daycare and everything, and hanging out, and we were all in the bedroom, and he was laying on the bed, and he got up, wandered out into the living room, and then just kind of sat down and was staring into space. And we kind of came out, I sat down, and he looked wrong. And so I was petting him, and I was trying to get some kind of rise out of him, some kind of reaction, and he just was sitting there, just zoned out. And he ended up throwing up a couple times, and I was very worried. I'm like, I got, we got to take him in, because I just don't know what's going on. So I loaded him up, and I took him to an after hours emergency clinic for dogs. They were full, so I headed down about a half an hour away to another one and waited several hours to get in. And they were worried that it was something serious, and it could have been this, could have been that, blah, blah. And they looked him over and they checked him out, gave him some medicine, and ended up sending us home. Said, hey, if it's not, this isn't over, just come back and we'll figure it out. And so the next day he's throwing up again. He's throwing up stomach acid, basically, like, you know, like blech, like not food. So I took him in, and again, there for hours, but, you know, but letting them know, they, you know, and they didn't charge us to come back, because they're like, well, you know, it's been less than 24 hours, so come on back. And they looked him over and this and that, you know, this and that. They checked him out and did a bunch of tests, and he discovered he had perforated his large intestine, and he was basically going septic. And without emergency surgery, we would have to euthanize him, because he couldn't survive. And he was miserable. And at that point, you know, they're starting to kind of, okay, so this could be this much, this could be that much, this could be that much. And we'd already kind of run up a couple thousand dollars. And they came back and it's like, so this is, you know, this is how much the surgery could be, and then it could go to this. And suddenly I'm faced with a $12,000 bill. And I had no choice. I mean, I'm not ready to let go of this dog. Like, he wasn't, like, it was one of those things where it wasn't, you know, there's nothing we can do and you just need to kind of do the humane thing. It was, this is what's happening. We can fix it. Do we fix it? And I said, yeah. And I was crying and I was upset, and I called my wife, and I was there by myself, you know, nothing could do, because you don't want to have a toddler. I mean, I was there 8 hours, 10 hours, something like that. I was there all told 20 hours that weekend. So maybe over 10 hours. But you don't want her to kind of have to go through all this, and especially it's stressful. Like, while I was at these places, like, I heard people dealing with the death of three pets, and that's very hard. All of it was just terrible. And so I said, yeah, like, you know, do the surgery. So they prepped him, and the doctor had told me, he's like, it's a 50-50 chance of him surviving the surgery. If they can get in and it's an easy fix and they can fix things and blah, blah, blah. And then from there, he has to make it the first 3 days, and not have an infection and not have it tear open again. And after that, if he can make it the next, you know, the first 7 days, then he should be in the clear. But the first hurdle was the surgery. So I, you know, they're like, if you want to go, it's going to be a little while. I'm like, no, I'm staying, because I didn't want him to be alone. And I, you know, if the worst came down to it, I wanted to be there, if we had to let him go. So I kind of sat there and cried and just kind of, you know, did the best I could to kind of just hang in there. And we got to be able to go back and say goodbye to him, and see him, which was, so miserably hard. And I waited and waited, and finally, just before 2, the doctor came in, and the operation was successful. They removed a large chunk of his intestine. They thought that maybe it could have been something he ate, or it could be like cancer. They weren't sure. So they were just, they're going to send a sample of everything in, but that'd take a minute. So I could go home. I went home, and they recommended keeping him for a week, just to make sure that he got the care he needed and healed up and this and that. So we kept him there a week, and again, the costs are rising and rising. At that point, we're close to $25,000. I've burned through 2 credit cards, some savings, and had to use my care credit and my wife's. And it's funny, because I get it, and, you know, people, I don't know if anyone ever listens to these, but people out there in the world be like, you just put him down. And I hear that. And I, you know, and I know people say that, and they, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's a terrible thing, that's what it comes down to. Like, you know, like with you, I mean, and again, a pet is not a human, but when you go out there and you start looking at it as if they are human, imagine, like, well, you know, your brother's really sick and we could take care of him, but if you don't have the money, we're just going to have to put him, you know, let him go and euthanize him. And you start to kind of just like, Jesus. It's just, it's horrifying and heartbreaking. Like, we had the means. We were very lucky. I was able to pay all my credit cards off recently from a payout of a trust. I got very lucky that I could take care of that. I sure as heck didn't want to run up all this debt, but I wasn't ready to let him go. So we left him there. We went to go see him. I went with once by myself. I went once with the family, and my wife went once to go see him that week. And you could tell it was very hard on him. He was having a hard time recovering because they cut him from sternum to groin to get all of that stuff out of him. Like, his whole stomach was full of this like stomach acid, just like blech, sickness basically. And he was, you know, healing up best he could. He had a cone of shame on. So he was having a hard time, and it was hard on us to see him like that, but he was slowly healing, and within a week, he finally was able to go home. Like, I think they would have liked to have kept him another day or two, but the costs were just mounting so high, we couldn't really do it. So we took him home and had him isolated from his puppy's sister, his dog sister. So because she likes to play, and she plays rough, and she and I kind of traded off sleeping in a separate room with him for a few days. And then I took him to his vet, and the vet was like, it looks great. Like, he's doing okay. Everything's looking good. Everything's going good. And he was cleared to be kind of in gen pop. So his sister didn't want to play rough, but didn't. And we were all happy to have him with us again. And he was different. I had, you know, my parents had a dog named Trouble. So it was an Airedale. She was an Airedale. And she was like Tigger. She was bounce, 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 bounce. Very full. I mean, tons of energy. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Very sweet. Well, my family had a house fire, and she was away from the family for a week, and she came back, and she was different. Between the trauma of the fire and being away from her family for that long, she was different. And that's kind of how Dangy was, is he came back different. You know, he sleeps most of the time. He doesn't really want to do anything. He kind of eats and sleeps and that's about it. He was on a ton of meds, which was, you know, he doesn't want to take meds. He can sniff out my medication and just hates it. But I mean, he's definitely different. But he's still our boy. He'll still get excited. He's still sweet. He's still our boy. So. A week after he had been home, I got a call from the vet again. Maybe it was 2 weeks, I forget. It was about a week, something like that. And they had found cancer, and they recommended they believed it was lymphoma. Thought we should go see the oncologist and kind of get a full rundown of what we could do. Steroids, and that'd be 3 to 6. We could do, or we could do chemo, and that's like 6 to 9. And I was like, well, like, you know, doses or whatever, or treatments or what? And the doctor was like, no, that's how long he would have to live. So suddenly, we thought we were out of the clear, and I was just given the death sentence for my dog. And I called my wife and told her. This was the end of June, so it took 15, 17 days almost to go and get in to see the oncologist. And when we finally got in to see her, you know, she checked him out, and they did some testing. And said, yeah, this is, you know, this is what it is. You can do steroids, and that'll give him, you know, he seems to be, everything's going well. Everything's going good for him right now. Like, so you can put him on steroids, and he'd been on steroids. Like, they put that through. And it made him, you know, he wolfs down food, and he has to drink lots of water, and he's always, when he needs to go to the bathroom, he has to go. You know, there's no two ways about it. He's had accidents in the house because it's just, he can't wait. She said, if you wanted to stick with the steroids, that should give him about maybe a month or two, maybe. But when he declines, he will decline quickly, and that'll be that. There's another middle thing, and that'll give you about three to five, maybe. And then there's another one that, chemo, that could maybe give you up to six, but there's no promises. And to do the chemo, that would be an extra $10,000. The steroids was like, the bottle was $10, and the other one was about $6,000. And she said, you can think about it, and we could have started treatment then, you can think about it. And my wife was just shell-shocked. I had already come to terms with the fact that, we're going to lose him. There's just, I don't think that they're just like, oh no, it's not really cancer. I mean, the problem has been, and it's been since the start, I just learned a couple days ago that it is lymphoma for sure, because it could have been something else. My problem is this, that people live with cancer for years. Now, it's not great. It's not, it's not, their life expectancy is diminished, but is this a cancer that's, and they've said, this kind of cancer, it is very quick, it is very, it'll spread fast. But if he's had it forever, is it just been dormant? Is it active now? Is it, we just don't know. He seemed fine in the scans and everything, so we just don't know. So is it really a couple of months? Is it several months? Getting a message from the doctor, it even sounds like she thinks it could be a little bit of time, but there's no knowing, which is frustrating. Because again, he seems different now, but it's partially the steroids. Because they have side effects, and it's making him feel not great. So is that why he seems different right now? Or is it because he's sick and we just don't know? And it's miserable, because I'm like, do you take him off the steroids so the last time he can have, whatever it is, he can enjoy? My wife and I did decide to keep him just to do the steroids, because the doctor we'd have to go to is an hour-ish away. He would have to have, this is outside of the cost, a treatment every week for 3 weeks, a week off, and then three more treatments, and I'd have to go... just 15 treatments or something. It'd take a few months. And I just don't want to put him through that. Like the travel, his sister gets scared every time he leaves. I think he gets scared that we're going to leave him, or that maybe, I don't know. I don't know if dogs kind of understand their mortality completely. So it could be that. But I don't want to put him through that. And then to have two different medicines put in him. And then he has to maybe he'll get sick afterwards, maybe he won't, maybe he'll be okay, it'd be more meds he has to take, and then he has to go again the next week. And I can't, we both work, my wife and I, so how are we going to do that? And it's just so many things, and again, it's terrible that you have to think about all of these things. Though it's the reality, we have family friends that their son was born with a bad heart and had to have heart surgery as a baby, and they were going through that. And I just it's one of those things where I just don't know how you do it, because it's this kind of healthcare stuff is so invasive. And I tried to explain stuff like, look, dude, like the money alone. Oh yes, I know. And it's like, and it's funny, and I get it. And they know, but they don't know. Like they understand, but they don't really get it. Which is kind of, it gets to be frustrating. Because it's just like, dude, it's not that easy. But so now, the die is kind of cast, and it's kind of we've been going through a living grief for over a month now. And it's miserable. And I find it's weird because I cry during movies, or I get upset and stuff, and the kind of sad stuff. And things hit me, and I've been so upset about him. It's crazy because my wife even said it when we were at the oncologist. She said, I just wish he would go. And it's terrible because I had that with my mother when we were losing her. Because you know they're going to die. And for you can't stand the extended pain. It hurts so much. But you also don't want them to go through it. And you hate that they're going through this too. He is certainly not in a position where I feel like we have to euthanize him yet. You know, I don't know if I hope that he is able to pass, like, in his sleep at home. My big fear there is we have a 3.5-year-old daughter who doesn't know what death is yet. And I wrestled with what we're going to do. And I was like, my wife found a book on grief. Like, well, this, you know, maybe this is the way. So I ordered that, and I'm looking through it, and there's a glossary, and it mentions autopsies, and it mentions religion, and this and that, and we're not religious. And I think I'm just like, that's not, it's for an older kid, probably. And I, in the end, I'm just kind of like, I'm just going to let her kind of enjoy him while he's here, and when he's gone, try to explain to her kind of what it means when people are out of our lives when they're gone. You know, she lost my dad. But she doesn't quite understand it, I'm sure. She just knows that guy is gone. So it's, you know, it's very hard. All of this. And it's miserable. Because again, like, the way I can see it in my mind is kind of like when you have to throw up. And you know you're going to be sick. And that it's coming. You know this awfulness is coming. And there's really nothing you can do. You just kind of have to go through it. And I hate it. And the miserable thing is, you know, it's this is the cost of love, of loving an animal, of loving a friend, of loving anyone. This is the cost. And humans have the luxury, for some of us, for many years, where you don't really have to get, you know, waist deep in the sorrow and grief. But, you know, if you do get lucky, that day is going to come, because as you age, so too do the people you love, and they will slowly pass away. And you're left kind of trying to put your pieces together and to kind of put it all into some perspective. And, you know, there's no rhyme or reason. There's no meaning. There's no fairness or unfairness. You know, disease is what it is. Like, it hits all things in some way or another. It's not fair, and they're cursed, and then they're, you know, it's, they're a good person, so why did this happen? That doesn't matter. There's no, why did they have to die in an accident? It's just, it is what it is. Like, when you think of a universe where the collision of things led to a big bang that led to all that there is, if you're, you know, of the science mind, to think that one person that left for work 10 minutes late and is getting emails and texts and is driving and trying to be mindful of those, because, you know, maybe they're even important, like, I need your attention right this moment, and they're doing that. And they're driving fast, and they take their eyes off the road for a minute, and they just happen to go into the wrong lane, and they kill someone. There's no intention. There was a series of events that led to what it is. And we can try to find meaning in it, and it doesn't mean there is. You know, there are the sharks, the human sharks in the world, who are predators, who look to commit harm, but generally it's just chance and happenstance are just terrible things that occur, and they're not a matter of fairness or unfairness. It's just, they are. Humans are selfish animals, and what we want, is what we care about. And that's kind of, and so, you know, we put ourselves in positions to, like, get what we want, even puts others at risk. You know, someone that's like, hey man, I'm just having a good time. I'm just going to have a couple more beers and then I'm going to go home. And it's like, I'm fine to drive home. And they end up killing someone. They weren't ready to stop partying. They thought that they were more capable than they actually were. That, you know, it's, shoot, we all do stupid stuff that we shouldn't, risking harm all the time, all of us. And it's not even that we're putting other people at risk. We are, or though we do that too, like where we're driving and we drop something, so we lean down, take our eyes off the road for a second to grab it, or reach back for our kid or something. Something could happen in that instant, and it's stupid. And you go, gosh, why did I do that? That's the stupidest thing. But we do it. And it's not even necessarily, I trust my skill this much. It's just our brains sometimes are very demanding. And they're just like, no, I need this done now. And if we don't do that now, and sometimes we have no choice, we have to like take care of whatever. But if I don't do it now, it's going to drive me crazy. And it's like an itch that we can't reach. So in the end, we'll all have to deal with grief. I don't know. It is the baggage that comes with love. It is the writing at the bottom of the contract. The stuff we skip over. And unfortunately, it is the tax we pay on loving and having people and animals and whatever in our lives. And it sucks. You know, and all you can do is cherish what you have, cherish what you ended up, you know, hold on to it. You know, do everything possible to not obsess over the bad that your projection of your bad or their, you know, the expansion of their bad. You know, it's not great to whitewash things, but it's also not great to demonize people or things or animals or whatever that are no longer there to make amends or answer or anything. It's just, they're gone. And you shouldn't have to live with carrying that burden. You know, again, like, it's easy to say that, but if someone's done, you know, horrible, vile, evil things, I mean, it's a world difference there, isn't it? You know, it's not like you're just like, well, you know, that's terrible that my dad was a rapist, but gosh, he was my dad, so cool, like, you know, we had good times. Like, I get it, that's a complicated thing. Like, you have to kind of make your way forward the best you're able. You're walking through glass. Or, you know, whatever, my stepmother was terrible to me, but I understand that she was mentally ill, or, you know, whatever it is. Unfortunately, this is the extra spicy flavor that you just kind of got to parse through and just kind of do the best you can. That's all there is. But I mean, there is no good grief. It's all awful. It's all painful. It all hurts. That it becomes weaponized, that it becomes stigmatized in our culture is so disgusting. That there are times where great, you know, mass incidents of horror and tragedy happen, and sick people use it for their own gain. Like, oh, well, that school shooting, that's fake, because it couldn't be real, because then it means that I have to deal with issues that I'm not ready to deal with. Or that plane crash is terrible, but it's a great way for me to make some money by scamming some people. And lying to them about who I am. Just these kind of things. And that's the terrible part of it all, is that there are people that weaponize grief and feed from it. Heck, just the whole death in industry is just so crazy. The money you have to spend just to put someone to rest, it's just insane. Absolutely insane. And then, shoot, I've been to funerals where you have funerals and people use it as their place to grandstand and to, you know, you'll get pastors that will speechify and just, oh, here, I'm going to tell you my feelings on the world, which, no, man, we just want to hear about this person. Even if that person was on your side of the fence on things, it's not what this is for. Or you'll get someone else that'll come up and just, like, wants the spotlight. There is no good grief. Like the loss, you just kind of go through it, and you kind of make of it what you can, and you try to wrap yourself in the memories of them to keep warm at night. And that's about as good as you can hope for, unfortunately. And there's not some grand, like, hey, everything's great, as it kind of ending to this podcast, because it is what it is. I guess if there's good in grief, it's that it reminds us how much these people, these animals, these whatever meant to us. And it shows you, because we forget so easily, how bright they shone and how impactful their life was and how important. And hopefully they inspired you, they affected you, they are part of you. That's a hope we can keep moving forward with, that their legacy is in how they changed us. And in that way, they're never dead. But the fact is, one day, we'll all go toes up. And we can only hope that there is more kindness in people's heart towards us than anger. Because we are imperfect creatures. We are selfish. And we do so much wrong in our lives that we can only hope that people can forgive us, forget it, and at least weigh the good with the bad and look at us and with, fond memories and not disdain. My friends, this was not the most exciting or happy of podcasts, but it was one I needed to get out. Naturally, of course, it's the longest I've done in a long time because I just, I hope you are well. You can find all of my blogs and podcasts at SpookyChris.com. You can find my new book there as well, Heedless Reflection, which, oddly enough, is about death and grief and coping with both. It's interesting. I wrote it the year my dad died. I wrote 4 books that year, and it was one of the books I wrote, and 2 of them deal specifically with death. Well, I guess 3. So it's interesting, but yeah, this one is about grief and about trying to live with anger and grief and trying to hold God for blackmail, as one character does. But it's a fun book. It's a weird book. You can find it on my website or at Amazon.com. You take care, stranger. I'll talk to you soon.